I'm James Randerson, and this is Science Extra from The Guardian. Professor Larry Susskind is one of the world's foremost experts on global environmental negotiations. He holds posts at Harvard Law School and MIT, and runs the MIT-Harvard Public Disputes Program. I asked him why international environmental treaties, such as Kyoto, have fallen so far short of what environmentalists hoped they would achieve.
Well, I think the three things that are worth focusing on. First is the treaties that we have really aren't very ambitious, and it takes so much time and so much effort to get agreement on anything that what we finally get agreement on sets very modest goals. And so we have global environmental treaties on hundreds of topics, but they don't have goals and timetables in them that would really address the questions they were meant to address very effectively. So that's the first problem. The second problem is that there really aren't any incentives for countries to sign these treaties. You have to have a leadership, or you have to have a public that pushes the leadership to say, look, these environmental issues, these sustainable development issues, they're very important. We need to be part of a global effort. But without that leadership at the country level, we don't have any incentive to get reluctant countries to join treaty regimes and take them seriously. And the third is there's no penalties, there's no disincentive, even if you've signed a treaty, even if you've ratified it, no disincentive to make sure that you comply. That is no penalty if you don't comply. And so what kind of system is it that can't bring people to the table, can't get them to do what they might otherwise not be inclined to do, and so produces agreements that can't solve the problems that it was designed to solve?
I mean, it sounds almost that you're kind of advocating for some kind of world environmental police or world government. I mean, these are incredibly difficult problems to solve, aren't they? What can we put in place to improve things?
No, I'm not advocating the green police run around the world and give tickets for countries that don't do what they're supposed to do. But I do think we can do a little better. First, we could set up environmental treaty-making, science advisory groups in different regions where we really got enough people to learn about these problems, and they could be consistently the ones who funnel in scientific advice from different country perspectives and regional perspectives. Right now, we don't have anything like that. Each country gets the science advice that it wants, consistent with what it wants the answer to be, and science advice, therefore, gets trivialized in the making of environmental treaties. So we could set up, through collaboration of science societies around the world, a kind of standing set of regional science advisory groups on environmental treaty questions. I think that would work. Second thing we could do, we could talk about giving incentives to countries to sign, particularly developing countries. We could say, if you sign, then you're entitled to new technologies that are going to help you comply with this treaty from countries in the north that are going to be bound to only give the technologies or sell the technologies at a discount to countries that have signed the treaty. So we could use the financial interests of the north and target it to the countries in the south by making technology sharing more of a visible benefit of treaty involvement. Similarly, and I realize that this is a far-out idea at the moment, but I have a hope it will gain some momentum. We could have a tiny tax on every bit of electricity produced everywhere in the world. It's taxed in most places anyway. A tiny little tax collected nationally that goes into a global kitty to try to make these environmental treaties such that they repair the damage caused by the energy production that's producing the electricity. So every country would be, in a sense, taxed, but it wouldn't just go back into that country to try to correct the adverse environmental impacts of energy production. It would go into a global treaty regime, and then that would be a reason, hey, sign up, because if you sign up and you need help implementing this, we got some funds. And the funds have come from your country and every other country. So this idea of a global tax on energy production, electricity production, that would then be managed globally, would then allow us to create more of incentives for countries, reluctant countries, to sign.
So you mentioned a couple of carrots there, but is there an idea for a stick as well?
Well, countries are sovereign, and even if I say I'd like a country to stop doing a bad thing, it's really hard to get other countries to sign something to go after them. Very few instances in the whole history of the United Nations where sanctions have been brought on countries that didn't do what they're supposed to do. And those sanctions aren't, I mean, imagine trying to get sanctions against a country that didn't meet its treaty obligations for environmental treaty. It's not going to happen. But I propose publicizing in a very, very transparent way countries that haven't met their treaty obligations, that haven't signed, and that haven't met their treaty obligations. I would make it so visible on the web that civil society groups in those countries would have a basis for claiming, hey, leaders, you didn't sign this. We didn't know this was even going on. And so if we could use shaming, as it's called, through UNEP, through UNDP, maintaining a very visible web page going through all the different treaties, which countries signed, which didn't, which ratified, which didn't, which complying, which haven't, I think we would provide ammunition to groups in those countries. It's the same kind of thing that we do in the human rights field. What we do internationally is we have a human rights investigatory process, but it only works when it promotes sensitivity on the part of the leaders of a country that have been denying human rights to pressure that come both within their countries and from civil society groups all around the world. So, but other than that, there's no big international stick for getting countries to sign or live up to their treaty agreements in the environmental world that I know of.
Your analysis of the problem here is, well, I think, profoundly depressing, actually, particularly when one thinks of the prospects for the son of Kyoto. I mean, you know, do you think Copenhagen has a hope in hell?
I think that if we go forward as usual, we're not going to get much in Copenhagen. But just two simple ideas could make a real difference and allow us to make progress in Copenhagen. One is go back to the idea of common but differentiated responsibilities. Set different...
Just briefly, what do you mean by that?
Right into the next protocol, different targets and timetables and obligations for different sets of countries in terms of how poor they are or how much of the problem they actually create or suffer from.
So kind of get away from these arguments about, you know, the developing countries saying, we're not going to do anything, you cause the problem, and developed countries saying, well, pretty soon you're going to be a massive part of the problem, and so you've got to do it too.
Yeah. Right. So we write right into the treaty, least developed countries, this is their goal, this is their share. We all have a common goal, but this is their share of the responsibility, and they have this much time, longer than some of you others, to get this done. And you might have multiple classes of places defined by hard numbers where they have goals they can reach. We would be able to achieve much more overall if we could put the biggest burden on the most developed countries as part of that schedule and then move forward. So that's a change we could make. There's nothing that says we can't do that, right? And the second change, small change, going forward in the next protocol, I would like to argue that we set modest goals for very short periods and that we agree ahead of time that we're going to ratchet up the targets for each of my categories of countries by 3%, 5% every 3 years. Unless our findings teach us as we meet every year to review what's going on, that we should make a different adjustment. So you already have built in the process of tightening or strengthening the treaty. Because what we get now is, you know, wait another 5 years, have another meeting, agree to the lowest common denominator standard, we won't make progress. This is what we would call an adaptive management approach built into treaty drafting. There's no reason in the world we couldn't do both of those things in the next round.
That was Professor Larry Susskind speaking to me at the AAAS Science Conference in Boston. For more interviews like this and the very best news and analysis from the worlds of science, technology and the environment, check out the best news and analysis from the worlds of science, technology and the environment, check out